This is tape number 8 on Revelation. Our last lesson closed with the sounding of the seventh trumpet at the close of chapter 11, which immediately sets all heaven rejoicing, because the kingdoms of this world, they say, are become the kingdom of our God and of His Christ, or His Anointed One. Faith here sees all as already wound up and consummated, everything fulfilled, even though historically we are just entering the final convulsions of judgment that will bring this about. Verse 18 of chapter 11 says, "The nations were angry," and this is an obvious reference to Psalm 2, where we see the nations, they're called in the King James Version, the heathen, raging against God and determined to break His restraints and throw off His harness. This is to a great extent what we see throughout the whole of Revelation right up to this point, the nations in revolt. But in the last verse of that psalm, there is a warning which says, "Kiss the Son, or be reconciled to Him, lest He be angry, and you perish when His wrath is kindled but a little," reminding all that God's patience will end, and that there will be a day of anger and retribution. Notice that the psalm begins with the nations angry, but it ends up with God angry. The sounding of this seventh and last trumpet is that final day of anger and retribution. Chapter 12 is introduced to explain the ages-long background of the universal conflict between God and Satan, and in this way to help us understand the two evil characters who appear in Revelation 13 to lead the Western world in its final head-on clash with God, namely the beast and the false prophet. To understand them and their appearance at this time, chapter 12 is very necessary. It leads up to them. The woman with the 12-starred crown, who is the mother of the man-child, who will rule all nations with a rod of iron, can only be Israel, from whom Christ the Messiah was born according to the flesh. The picture begins long before His birth, of course, so this chapter is obviously not chronological. It is background material showing us the beginnings of the struggle that is shortly to reach its dreadful climax here on earth. If God is going to bring in His King to rule the earth, then Satan will oppose this, for the earth is his realm. Perhaps even it was the sphere of his rule and responsibility before he fell, though this we can only deduce. Before the woman Israel actually brings Christ on the scene, Satan is waiting and working to thwart such a plan. He did this by having Cain kill Abel to choke off the line of the Promised One. Later, he tried to confuse things by leading Abraham into disobedience with Hagar to bring in a totally different heir than Isaac, whom God had promised. This not only confused and upset things at the time, but Ishmael sired the Arab nations, who to this day furiously contest Israel's right to the land where all this must be fulfilled. Much later, the queen Athaliah had all of David's royal line slaughtered, 2 Kings 11, the line by which Messiah must come. And these happenings are only samples of a ceaseless war by the devil to make Christ's coming impossible. When at last Christ actually makes His appearance, these efforts are intensified. Herod, the man in the synagogue at Nazareth, the strong stoning mobs of Jerusalem, they all tried. Satan stirred the elements into a storm on the lake, probably with the same purpose. The temptations in the wilderness were to destroy Him physically, cast thyself down, or spiritually, if thou wilt worship Me. And the awesome conflict in the Garden of Gethsemane was likely Satan's last-ditch stand to keep the Lord from the cross and from final victory. But all was in vain. God's future ruler is caught up to God here in our chapter 12 and His throne. That is in verse 5 of chapter 12, where where he will stay until he comes out in chapter 19 to destroy Satan and his representatives on earth and all who follow them. The woman, Israel, flees to the wilderness, the dispersion of the Jews among the nations, where she is miraculously preserved by God right through the 1260 days, that is 3.5 years, or 42 months mentioned elsewhere, and through all these events on earth, there is corresponding spiritual conflict in the heavens, where Satan, the prince of the power of the air, is in mortal combat with God's agents, and where he is finally overcome and thrown down to the earth. He, now in fury because he knows his time is short and that he cannot get at Christ, comes to earth to persecute Israel, the earthly vehicle and instrument of God's plans. Chapter 12, verse 13. This broad attack on the whole nation narrows down to the spiritual, God-fearing remnant of Israel in the last days, and to them, the remnant, he now turns his attention. To do this, he develops his strategy and his tactics in chapter 13 by sending on earth his two chief agents, the two beasts, one called the beast and the other called the false prophet. As there is a divine trinity of holiness and blessing from above, so there is a satanic trinity of evil and a curse from beneath. The second is obviously, that is, the second beast of our chapter, is obviously the lieutenant of the first, exercising the power or authority of the first beast to cause the earth dwellers to worship the first beast, not himself. See verse 12. And doing all kinds of miracles to deceive the earth dwellers into receiving the beast's mark in hand or forehead. In order to facilitate this, the whole of the Western society has been organized, socialized, computerized, and supervised, so that anyone refusing to comply with the orders of the head of state could be reduced to the condition of a non-entity, a non-person, unable to work or live, since verse 17 says he cannot buy or sell if he does not have the mark or the number of the beast. Selling would not only mean selling goods in trade, but also selling his services in the form of work. And buying means, of course, the acquiring of anything, goods or services. Here we have the beginning of the great tribulation. Those who will not buy are to be broken. The first of these two sinister personalities who now turn up, obviously he is the supreme civil and governmental power, for he has 10 horns of power, all crowned, and these are identified for us specifically in chapter 17, verse 12, as 10 kings, not yet in power in John's day, but destined to rule with the beast for a brief and divinely limited period. These 10 kings, the heads of the countries of Western Europe, confederated by now into a revival of the Roman Empire, something we see the beginnings of even in our day with the European Economic Community and its Eurobank, these kings of the revived empire will submerge their national sovereignty or autonomy for the benefits of unity and power politics. In Daniel 7, verse 8, we see how the beast came to dominate the 10 kings or horns. He simply uprooted 3 of the original horns or kings and expanded his power until the remainder have no voice. Read also carefully Daniel chapter 7, verses 22 to 25. This person is referred to again in Daniel chapter 9, verse 27, where he is called the Prince that shall come, who will confirm a defense treaty with Israel for 7 years, but breaks it in the middle of that period by putting up what is there called in Daniel the abomination that maketh desolate, and causing sacrifices to cease. This is enlarged on in Daniel chapter 12, verse 10, and the Lord Jesus himself says in Matthew 24, verse 15, that this will be in the holy place and will be the beginning of the tribulation. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 4, we are told that this same individual sits in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. See also Daniel chapter 11, verse 36. There is little difficulty in seeing in these different passages one exalted and powerful ruler of the end times, going under different names, such as the beast, the horn, the man of sin, the son of perdition, the wicked or lawless one, etc., but always as Satan's delegate, to whom he has given his power, his throne, and his authority, Revelation 13:2, and always fighting against Christ and his people. These two men are Satan's instruments, chosen and used in his furious fight against God and his purposes, and identified in so many scriptures. In 2 Thessalonians 2, we learn that the leader cannot be revealed until there first come the falling, or better, the turning away, and that this cannot happen until the restrainer, that which holds back, is removed, evidently referring to the taking away of the church. Then, with the removal of the salt and the light of the earth, Satan, in his desire to annihilate the woman Israel, as we saw in chapter 12, will launch his final campaign through his agents, the beast and the false prophet. It is his last fling, or the first stage of it, for we know that after the millennium, alone, for his two great lieutenants will by then have been put permanently into the lake of fire, at the end of the millennium he will stir up the nations in their final revolt and to their last battle before the curtain comes down to their destruction. And then the putting of Satan into the lake of fire too. Those who refused to accept Christ, the truth, who came in his Father's name, will be blinded by a strong delusion to believe the lie who comes in his own name. Christ refused Satan's offer of the kingdoms of the world, but Satan will find another taker in the beast, who will gladly rule in the devil's name until God strikes him down. Israel refused the offer of the new kingdom covenant from the Prince of Peace, nailing him to the cross and suffering dispersal and rejection as a result, but she will in her blindness make a covenant of death with the head of the Western Confederacy and will go through the tribulation as a result. The Master of the Universe, the Lord and Molder of the ages, sits over earth's history and works everything out for his own ends. He has revealed all these plans to us so that we can now study them.